MMA Roadshow, episode number 286. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, but that's not all. We got a little hot tea in the house as well. That is Oscar Willis from the
good-looking Irish
World MMA Award-nominated The Mac Life. And by the way, folks, he's British.
He's not Irish at all. He's English.
I get to straddle the coast. I get to straddle whichever way I'm feeling that day. You know?
It came up today how often he gets mistaken for being Irish. And, of course, working for the Mac Life probably doesn't, you know, assist in that. But let's let the record reflect. This man is London-born and bred.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, my father's Northern Irish, so I go over there. Well, I did before, you know, the world fell apart twice a year. Yeah, so I like to straddle it. But, yeah, I mean, it's not just Irish. Australian. I've been accused of being French before, which I think is...
Wow, what an insult.
It's basically a hate crime.
right?
But, yeah. Which is weird, because usually Americans are so good at placing accents and, you know, just...
Oh, yeah, we're fantastic at that. Yeah, we're great at that. Well, we're all three together because it's, you know, listen, it's kind of, I guess, as you like to call it, Cold Coffee, a little bit of a handover.
A changing of the guard.
A changing of the guard.
To keep it English.
Yeah. Myself and Oscar are taking off on Sunday for Fight Island. We're going to have a five-week run over there, so there's going to be a lot of us in your future if you're an avid listener. So hopefully you're a hot tea fan because imagine we're going to be doing quite a bit together. And, of course, Cold Coffee will still be assisting us with production and working on stuff for MMA Junkie back home. But this was just a way to say goodbye for 5 weeks and just say that you love everybody, right?
And a warm embrace
to all the listeners.
And somebody had to pick up that chocolate for Darren Stewart that I have in the fridge.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, actually. It was white chocolate, right?
White chocolate, yeah.
Isn't it the mini buttons he wanted? Or was it just a bar of white chocolate?
I think he just said white chocolate. At least I didn't pay that much attention.
What is the story here? I don't understand what's going on.
It was post-fight, and we're having a really fun conversation with him. He was just sort of opening up, and it was that whole night where Oscar's opening question was like, what was the fucking word?
Darren Stewart kept calling himself a snack.
A snack,
so
yeah.
He won the fight and I went, so would you describe yourself as
still a snack?
Yeah.
He's like, man.
Yeah.
Snack all day. So we had a lot of fun. So we were just chatting. But somewhere in there, you know, of course we asked him how he was going to, we were talking about food or how he was going to celebrate.
Right.
Classic question.
And then, yeah, right. And then he started talking about how chocolate in America sucked, and he just wanted white chocolate, and he couldn't find white chocolate anywhere.
We got white chocolate, Darren.
Yeah. And
why
he
are you insulting
like,
us?
He was like,
well,
he's
even
like,
more specific than that. He's like, I need to go to a 7-Eleven.
Like,
do you have 7-Elevens here?
7-Elevens here? We're like, we got 7-Elevens everywhere.
Like, bro.
So,
I think those are ours. Yeah. I think we invented those.
And so he said he was leaving to the airport, and he was like, but can you get me sorted? Can you help me out for his flight? And of course, I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, there's no way I'm going to see this guy before. But it got stuck in my head, so I went to the store and found white chocolate. And I was like, well, if I happen to see him or if he stays or whatever, I'll get him his white chocolate. And then I just stuck it in the fridge and didn't think about it. I was like, maybe he'll fight again. Maybe he'll fight again. I had two bars. I ate the other one. and then I almost tapped into the other one. And then I saw that he was fighting. I was like, wow, I might actually give him one of these things of chocolate. And then it turned out it was my furlough week.
Right.
So then I was like, well, shit, I'm not going to see him. So there's
some passing over some white chocolate
to me.
So when
it's a hot tea,
and now
my big terror
is that he's completely forgotten about it. He's gonna like look at the white chocolate. This is some sort of comment about race or something like that.
You're saying I'm fat?
Yeah. No, what the fuck are you talking about?
And even
idiot.
How you have to get it to him. I figured just at the end, if he even gets the win to make it to the post fight to even see him.
Wow.
I'm assuming
he has a great chance,
but you know,
he's fighting Kevin Holland.
It is a good fight.
That's a really good fight. So regardless, if you don't see him back there, you're free to eat it and take it with you or whatever. But
moment on the lips, lifetime on the hips.
Oh, but it is so good. White chocolate is good. I'm a milk chocolate guy. I don't like dark chocolate. It's just too rich or something. It's just something I'm not big
so
a
fan
of.
So you're a Colby fan.
Yeah, I like my chocolate like Colby, but white chocolate actually it's mild and it's got like a nice little subtle taste. But
it's the cocoa, right? It's the level of cocoa in dark chocolate is what makes it like it's too strong.
I think so. I think it's just too strong. Like,
welcome
I'll get
to
it.
The Candy Rose Show.
I'm Willy Wonka.
Well, listen,
he was American.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Not
it's just weird.
It was just. But they were all over in London, and they
were
lived
they?
In that
Maybe
yeah.
they were.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have been allowed near children anyway.
Yeah, right? But that Willy Wonka was a better Willy Wonka. better than the
The porn aspect winning wanker is much funnier. Yeah.
How are we this far off the rails already? It's still the mid-afternoon here.
And
on
I want to talk more candy.
Thursday,
you know, there's that guy that's giving away a candy factory, the jelly bean, the Jelly Belly guy. The owner of the Jelly Belly is giving away a candy factory with, like, Willy Wonka style, like,
what?
Find a golden ticket. You didn't see it? It was, like, in the news.
You get a factory?
You get, like, a candy factory.
I love the idea
of
some 14-year-old wins a factory. He's, like, immediately, like, oh, fuck it, I don't understand redundancy.
What do I do?
I don't understand factory. Look, profit.
I don't win a factory. It turns out they're, like, $400 million in debt and, like, the laborers on strike. Yeah. Like,
first thing the kid does is fire all the workers.
Oh, man, that's great.
Who knows? He's probably... And, you know, there's probably more to the story. Maybe it's a matter of, like, he's like, I'll help you start a factory. Not like Willy Wonka, where he's like, take all my Oompa Loompas and take care of them.
I don't think you're allowed those anymore.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. All right.
So reset.
Welcome to the MMA
Roadshow,
episode number 286. My name is John Morgan.
This is the candy edition.
All right, listen, UFC on ESPN. Here's the sad thing is, I was going to say, UFC on ESPN Plus 36 is this weekend. You know, for the past couple weeks, I mean, listen, we haven't tried to dress it up more than we should, but we're hardcore. I mean, the cards haven't been phenomenal. They've ended up being pretty entertaining. I mean, we've had some fun fights. But when we sat down to do the podcast, we haven't tried to tell you, like, oh, this is great. This is why you need to tune in. But, we always try to highlight a fight that you may not have realized you wanted to watch, or a fighter that you didn't realize that had a good story or whatever. But this week, man... This, to me, is pay-per-view quality. You know what I mean?
It's better than some of the pay-per-views this year.
It really is, man. Short of, you know, a title fight in the main event or whatever. I mean, you're talking about an incredibly deep main card. I mean, the main card is sick. And even top to bottom, some of the prelims, there's some notable names on there. Now, I will say this. The prelims are constantly changing. It seems like every week we get into it, man. COVID-19 rears up and takes a few. And in fact, we know right now, actually, that some of our reporters are working on some leads of some changes.
Well,
some happened last night.
Well, you look at 15 fights, you just assume something's going to drop off.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't had a 15-fight card in quite some time.
Last one to Fight Island was 15 fights.
Well, it's so long because these are all the ones that are being rebooked from being canceling before.
And it's either book now or you got to wait 5 weeks until we get back from Fight Island, or you got to make the trip to Fight Island. So, yeah, it's going to be a busy one. Mm-hmm. For instance, I'm looking at a name on there right now I think is already off.
Well, who's that? Maybe by the time it comes out, it'll be gone. I mean, you could just say a little birdie told you.
I heard that the Miguel Baeza-Jeremiah Wells fight isn't happening. I don't know which one of them tested positive, but I think one of them tested positive because, you remember, Jeremiah COVID. Wells was coming from the CFFC, which, of course, phenomenal organization.
I'm pretty sure they're immune.
Incredible.
They're such a good organization.
I've heard the production,
fighters are immune.
Like, from top to bottom, the production is amazing.
Really, just the product that they put out front is incredible.
You know, the bodies, the voices, they're all great.
They're
man.
Right there. So, I heard that fight's not happening. I don't know which side fell out. I don't know if a replacement's
and
happening.
If that's not the case, you'll never hear this.
That's the case. All right, but again, this is a card that I think everybody is really looking forward to. It starts with the main event, Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. And not only can I say that this is an event that we're really looking forward to, which, you know, more so than in recent weeks, but, man, we got to have a press conference right before we came over here. As Cole Coffey mentioned, he's on furlough this week, so he was just hanging out, I'm sure, probably tuned in, but myself and Oscar Willis were over there.
Couldn't look away, could you?
I saw the bits I saw were
okay. So
pretty.
Cold Coffee was not watching at all.
I
will rescind
bit.
My claim. but it was, you know, it was interesting. We haven't had. Now I know that you guys did 252. I was out of town that week. You guys did the 252 press conference, which was just Cormier and Stipe.
Yeah.
Which cool. That's the first in person press conference pre fight we had had since way back in March.
Yes.
And now this was the first one where we had multiple fighters at it. We'll get to the main event in a second. But just overall, we started out, the way it was set up was six fighters to start out with. You had Donald Cerrone, Nico Price, Khamzat Chimaev, Gerald Meerschaert, Ryan Spann, Johnny Walker. Socially distanced, spread way out on the dais.
To a degree.
To a degree, yeah. Maybe not 6 feet, but they were spread
out. A lot of touching between Cerrone and Khamzat.
Cerrone and Khamzat, yeah. They've made a bond. Maybe Cowboy realizes, hey, if we're buddies, maybe he won't want to fight me. Although, from what I can tell, Khamzat will fight you even if he is your buddy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was kind of cool. We didn't really know about it until kind of last minute that it was happening, as is everything in this COVID-19 world. We really didn't know until earlier this week that it was going on. But I don't know, man. It just... Not like trying to get all emotional or nothing, but it was just kind of cool to be in that environment again.
Yeah. So initially, when we found out that Tyron and Colby weren't going to be coming on, and in fact we were going to get the undercard guys, I was initially very disappointed because I think, you know, we were looking forward to that back and forth. We were looking forward to the drama and stuff like that. And we'll get to why that didn't happen in a bit, I'm sure. But if the undercard thing had been bland and there was no interaction between the fighters, I think it could have been very disappointing. As it was, because it was the first one in a while, I really did get a kick out of, like, people talking shit to each other, interactions. I watched Johnny Walker's reaction to some of the things being said. Like, it was fun, and I was a bit of a sourpuss going into it. But
pretty typical, though.
Yeah, I mean, God. But it was really fun. I think it was the Hamzat show. I don't think there's any denying that.
It was definitely the Hamzat show.
Which I'm seeing a lot of backlash too, but I'm surprised because people love it when people talk shit usually. So,
all right, you know what? Let's just start there.
How
then.
How many people did he say was going to smash?
Well, okay,
about five of the people on stage and Brock Lesnar.
So here's the deal. Let's start there. Let's start there before we get into Colby and Tyron, because it does feel very much like the Hamzat show in a lot of ways, other than people really do care about this main event, but the prelims especially. And I want to kind of get your take on it, because that was kind of where I started the press conference, was, you know, just asking Dana if he regrets kind of, you know, opening up this Pandora's box by saying we've got this Maya fight lined up as well. Because, man, I really feel like Hamzat went from being like the darling of Fight Island. Everybody just, you know, loved this guy. You know, Matt, look at these incredible performances. And then he's got that, you know, the Habib-esque tone where it's just enough English where he just says, I'm going to smash this guy, I'm going to smash this guy. And everybody kind of loved him, I thought. And now I'm seeing a lot of backlash and a lot of people that are saying, like, who is this guy? You know, they're double booking him. And you know, I don't know if it's so much as – I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if it's because he's getting favored treatment from the UFC that people are pushing back on him, or – they think the guy is too full of himself.
I think there's an element of both, right? I think whenever the UFC... it's funny because they always sort of deny that they do this, but when the UFC puts its machine behind fighters, it's pretty obvious. You know, it's pretty easy to tell, and their machine is behind him in a way we haven't seen before. It's funny when Dana's like, this guy wants to fight all the time. It's like, well, you know, I'm sure Cerrone would have been double booked a few times if you let him know it was an option. So I kind of don't want to buy into that narrative just yet.
Right.
But I do think it's something they've seen. Like, this guy can fight at middleweight and welterweight back to back, and this is something new in a sport that, you know, we're starting to see the same sort of trends and stuff. So I think that's why they're doing it. I think people can sense the UFC is behind it, so that's a bit of the backlash. I think also he kind of did the Tyron Woodley mistake when Tyron won the title. In that he beat these two sort of low-ranked guys and then started calling out Connor and the Diaz brothers.
Right.
It's like, well, if you know, so then you immediately stoke their fan base, which is obviously a lot higher profile and bigger, so they're going to just turn against you forever. I think if he'd have stayed quiet and just sort of churned out victories, maybe done the post-fight press conference, going to smash, and left it at that, it might have got away with it. But I would guarantee if he defeats Gerald in the way he's been beating people, it's sort of like, everyone's back on board again, you know?
It would be crazy. All right, let's do this. I do have a little bit of audio from the press conference where Hamzat and Jiro Mearshart went back and forth a little bit. This is one of my questions and one of Hot T's questions as well, kind of mashed up together here, where I started with Gerald. And, you know, I mean, obviously he's been asked about the damn thing over and over and over.
Yes.
But I was trying to just ask, like, had his, you know, temperament changed on
it a
little bit?
I was actually going to ask the same question.
Yeah.
Like, not about... let's ask you about it, but ask you about being asked about it, right?
There you go. So, and then that kind of lit a fuse. And Hamzat, he's definitely not trying to play the humble role, we'll say that. So here's a little bit of their back and forth.
Gerald, I wanted to ask you, because you've been asked nonstop about this. I mean, it's all anybody wants to ask. So, and you said, hey, I get it. I understand why they're doing it totally. But having to talk about it over and over and over, is this starting to get annoying and maybe like a little bit personal for you?
No, not at all, especially when you just asked it right now again. No, no, but I've been saying, I take it as somewhat disrespectful, because I feel like Hamzat's looking past me a little bit. But again, I don't blame him. I don't blame Dana. If I was those two guys, they'd be doing the exact same thing. So they're doing what they're supposed to do. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm coming in. I'm the crafty vet. I'm a tough guy, and I'm going to show them that this time you bit off more than you can chew.
Nice. What do you make
of
this?
And you know what's true, too, John, on this thing? When you look at this, I'm actually looking at the paper that's up here, and Gerald has a 94% finish rate. You know, he has 100% finish rate. The reason we made this fight is because it's a good fight. This is a real fight. You know, and if this kid does get by his next two opponents, you know what I mean? It is this. Gerald isn't a a layup, a stepping stone, a, oh, let's just overlook this guy to get to Damian Maia. There's none of that. We put on real, this is a real fight with a real guy. Yeah. So, you know, I get how people would think that, but it's not true. It's total bullshit. Total media bullshit.
You know, we have a lot of that. But Jared, I wonder, what do you make of his first two fights? I mean, I'm sure you watched the tape on him. I mean, were you impressed by what you saw on film, or did you think that was just a result of the matchups he had?
Look, I'm expecting him to be tough. I'm expecting him to try and impose his will and be very mentally strong. But in any of his fights that I've seen, he hasn't met real resistance. And I think that's going to be a big test. I don't care how many amateur
how
fights
many
you
times
have.
You lose your fights. You are like in the shadow, like what is friend to Conor? What is his name? Artyom Lobov. You are same shadow. How many times you lose your fights?
Well, I've lost quite a few fights. 31-13.
You think you're black belt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you
Jack
fight
Hermanson,
tough guys,
Jack Hansen, Jack Hermanson, he didn't know how a black belt. Why he choke you out?
Sometimes you lose when you fight tough guys, man.
Who give you?
You'll find out.
Belt. I have a blue belt. They're gonna choke you out.
You can go ahead and try there, buddy.
You have to give me your black belt to me.
All right. If you choke me out, I'll find a black belt. Give it to you. How about that?
If I choke you out, you are finished with this sport.
Okay. If I double leg you, do I get like a wrestling trophy or something?
If you double leg me. Try.
Okay, I will.
All right, thanks, guys.
You said there was a bit of a run-in with Hamzat at the host hotel earlier this week. Can you just explain what happened?
Yeah, I couldn't really understand because we're all wearing masks. And he said something about I like talking. I just said, yeah, I wasn't really paying attention when he walked away. He said, apparently one of my buddies heard him say something about he was going to smash my face. But again, trying to talk trash to somebody while you're wearing masks and walking in a different direction.
Because I say that, I'm going to smash your face. How are you going to stop that?
I'm sure you think.
How are you going to stop that, yo?
I'm probably going to beat you up is what's going to happen.
You look at my fight? You look at my last fight? No punches. Like, how many punches he did to his face?
Dude, I can
understand. Your head a little bit bigger, but.
I can't understand what you're saying. Speak clearly or something, all right? First of all, the whole black belt stuff. A black belt doesn't really matter. It matters what you do. And I'm
talking about your BJJ. Like, you like special BJJ guy.
Yeah, because I'm tired for
about
the most submissions.
If somebody
choke
you out, like, you have to be go train harder. Not talk about, like, I'm jiu-jitsu, I'm better than him. What the fuck is that, man?
I have tied for the most submissions in the middleweight division. That's what that is. So, yeah, I think I deserve a black belt.
We will see who you are.
All right, so they are going back and forth. Hamzat, man, he's embracing this role. It's interesting because I think, you know, on the one hand, I think the guy's got superstar written all over him. I do think he's got championship potential, man. I really do believe he can be a future champion, and I do believe he's got that it factor about him. I mean, obviously he's got the same things going for him that Habib does. Now, I know he doesn't want to be compared to Habib all the time, but you know, you do have the shared heritage, you do have the shared religion, you know. So obviously we see how big like Habib is in certain parts of the world because of the Muslim faith, obviously their Russian background. But I just think his style and his domination, he's got enough English, you know, that I think he can appeal to English speaking countries as well. I think the guy's got all that. I'm just getting worried. Like, I like it. I mean, it was fun. As you said, that was the best part of the press conference, I thought, was them going back and forth. But I also feel like he's starting to build up, like, people that want to see him fail now.
Yeah, but as he said, right, it's almost like Floyd Mayweather built a career out of people wanting to watch him fail. And if you don't want to be loved,
that's very true.
Doesn't really matter. As long as people want to watch you, that's the main thing, right? You get the reaction. So if he becomes one of the most hated guys in the UFC, it's still going to be must-watch TV. And I think if they still do this back-to-back stint, if they really are, as I'm sort of slowly suspecting, trying to build him up to having a middleweight title shot and a welterweight title shot, I know that's like crazy stuff, but I really believe there's just something in the air about it. If they really are, I mean, it doesn't matter if people love him or hate him, they're going to follow the guy.
It's true. If this goes out there and he does what he says he can do, I mean, people love winners. Love winners.
For sure. Gerald Meerschaert's no pushover, though.
Dude, Gerald's a badass. But what's crazy, though, is in my head, I thought Gerald, from what I remembered, now, I can't remember if I've ever actually been in the same room as Chimaev, But Gerald, I remember him being a decently sized gentleman.
Right.
Right.
So when they went up there for the face-offs, I was really surprised that he was not that much bigger. I mean, it was pretty darn even. Gerald maybe was a hair taller, if I remember, but
He's just a touch taller.
Just a bit taller.
I do think maybe a little thicker. A little thicker.
Yeah,
filled.
But it's not the wrestling thickness that, like, you
right.
know, I don't know. It's funny you say that because I remember Gerald said on the media day, which, I mean, you have to tune into if you
Virtual media
out.
Day.
It's
the best.
They're the best.
Yeah, those are so good.
But if the disgust in this room. But if he said that, you know, I saw him in person and I can't believe he thinks he's going to fight at middleweight. Like, this guy's a small guy. So I was really looking forward to watching them in person. And then when they got up there, I was like, "Oh, Gerald, I think you might have."
Yeah.
Was he down the other end of the hallway yeah. when you thought this? Like, he's the same yeah. size as you did.
Oh, he really, really is. So I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah, I was kind of expecting to see a bigger size difference to kind of see what Gerald was thinking. You know, coming in thinking like, "Oh, this young cat. You know, everybody's hyping him up. Let me just tower over him." We're eye level.
I would have actually preferred to see Gerald be significantly bigger because
right.
then if we're going to do this middleweight thing with Hamzat, he's going to fight bigger guys eventually.
Right.
So I'd like
much
to have seen
guys.
That. Yeah, I'd like to have seen that. So when the, I have to admit, it did, I know you can't look into face-offs, but it did sort of sway my meter a little bit further to sort of Hamzat.
I know. It's hard to not, just for the fact that what you've seen him be able to do when he just sort of gets in there and just overpowers guys,
Yeah. You
kind of were thinking that, okay, well, the size difference is going to help Gerald out. And then you're like, well, shit, there's not much of a size difference there.
Right.
I mean.
This is a real fight. I mean, I know Dana said it over and over and over. It's a real fight. It's a real test. But I think he's right about that. I think we'll have a much better indication of where we stand. Again, my eye sees real talent in Hamzat Chimaev. But
yeah.
I think we're going to have a much better indication after this fight of exactly where he stands. And as Dana said at the press conference today, man, if he can get through Mirshar and get through Maya –
But if he doesn't, how far down does he fall?
That's a good question. Because I mean,
do they still keep the Maya fight? If he just goes out there and gets
starched. Dana, I believe, I can't remember who interviewed him, but I believe Dana said that his performances at middleweight do not affect his bookings at welterweight. So even if he loses at middleweight, that doesn't affect how they're ranking him at welterweight.
That's interesting.
I think that's what I believe Dana said that.
Well, here's what I thought.
He just wants Maya to get pounded out.
Well, I mean, if Hamzat goes through Gerald,
yeah.
he's going through Damien. I mean,
yeah.
no disrespect
agree.
To Maya,
yeah.
but.
I would agree.
For sure.
So here's the thing that I was interested in. You asked how far he falls. I didn't get to. I mean, there was, you know, we only had limited time and that sort of thing. And I didn't want to ask everybody a question. But one thing that was on my mind, and I thought it was funny because especially of the way they were seated, is that just from our point of view, to the left of Hamzat Chimaev was Johnny Walker, the guy that was, oh my God,
yes.
this is the guy,
yeah.
this is the dude, this is the guy that's gonna beat John Jones. He's unbelievable. And now he's sitting through a couple of back-to-back losses. He got talked to a little bit today. He's up against a very, very tough matchup in Ryan Spann, who's a guy that has zero hype around him,
yeah.
but has a hell of a lot of skills. And just the
I've
idea.
I've been a big fan of Ryan for a long time.
Oh, yeah, he's great, man. Yeah, I know how much you're always singing his praises, that it's just ridiculous that he doesn't get the respect that he deserves.
Love that guy.
But just seeing that visual of them sitting there and thinking, man, and I'm not trying to say like John, because Johnny Walker is by no means like washed up and done. But man, when you talk about like hype trains, Johnny Walker had a hype train, and that right now, like I said, I don't want to say that people aren't paying attention to him or people don't care. They do. But man, how fast things can turn.
Well, it's a lot on how you lose, right? If Hamzat goes out and has a 3-round war with Gerald and gets tapped out by an armbar in the last minute, in sort of like he was on top and he didn't pull out in time, something like that, he's fine.
Yep.
But if you go out like Johnny Walker and get starched by a dude who's not meant to beat you in the way that he does, like by Corey Anderson, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I think we were talking about it before the presser, right? The thing about hype trains, like Johnny has a lot of work to do
yes.
to get even what realistic like a third of the way back to how he was before.
He was probably.
They were talking about him and John Jones next. If he beat Corey Anderson,
I was gonna say he was probably a win away from a title shot.
Yeah, I mean he was just the rockets were on him, and we talk about like you know the media side of things. For a guy who didn't speak that much English at the time, his views were insane. Like for a guy who speaks purely Brazilian, Johnny Walker's views were crazy because he's a bit quirky and stuff. not so much anymore.
Crazy, man. So I'm very interested. This Hamzat Gerald fight, especially after, you know, today, got a little more personal. Got a little bit more beef. I mean, those little.
Was funny that Gerald was like, "Oh no, look, you know, we really do respect each other. It's, you know," and then immediately Hamzat was like, "How fuck are you a black man?" So straight away. And then he's like, "I don't understand why he's so disrespected." And I was like, "You are disrespecting him, though."
Oh, it's so great, man. So I'm intrigued by that. Not to disrespect the main event, but I might be as intrigued by that as I am the main event. However, the main event is pretty damn phenomenal. Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. Grudge match, years in the making. Incredibly relevant in the welterweight division. Obviously, two guys coming off losses. However, you know, I find them to be in very different stations. And, of course, you know, Tyron Woodley lost to the champ and the number one contender, and Colby lost to the champ. So it's not like you're talking about, you know, oh, these are guys that are looking to rebuild. Woodley, I do feel, is in a little bit more of a precarious position here, right? Like, if he loses again. Now, again, if he loses, it would be he lost to the champ, lost to the former interim champ, lost to Burns, who was either the number one contender or could end up being the champ here in a couple months. Who knows? You know what I mean? So he's losing to the absolute best of the best. But when you start talking about three losses in a row, haven't registered a win since, what, 2018, that's not good.
Well, I mean, if – yeah, sorry.
No, I was just saying, it's just not good. So I feel like he's in a spot – I feel like he's in more – desperate need of a win, especially at his age too. I think 38 at this point. Not that, you know, if he loses he's done, but if he wants that title shot again, if he wants the most meaningful bouts available, like, I feel like this is almost a must win for Tyron.
I think if he loses this fight, he'll never see a title shot.
Yeah,
and never be in the conversation again. In fact, I think if he loses, he'll probably fight Hamzat. You know what I mean? Like, he's just. I think Daniel Cormier said this recently on his podcast, where if Tyron loses, he is now in the world where you're there to build new guys, and it's kind of harsh, really, because he has, like John just said,
the unfortunate reality,
you've just
right?
lost to the yeah. best of the best. It's not like you lost to the middle of the division; you've lost right. to the three of the best in the division.
Right.
But, you know, well, look, we know the UFC's relationship with Tyron hasn't always been the best. We know Tyron, and it's not just about Tyron losing; his performances have been dire. I mean, like, against Usman and Burns, been very, very poor. If it's the same against Colby. What is there left for him, you know? But I just think he will plummet down the rankings.
I agree. I feel like he's in a rough spot.
Three losses in a row.
Three in a row, man. I feel like it's a rough spot. You know, Covington is funny, right? Because people don't necessarily love Colby Covington, right? People want to see him lose, if we're being honest. But I feel like Colby Covington can – first of all, he's younger. I mean, I think he's 30 at this point. You know, he could always, you know, kind of get back on a run again. And I feel like Colby Covington can – I don't want to say talk his way into shots, but, I mean, there's people that want to punch him in the face. Yeah. I mean,
he'll talk his way into a shot.
The Masvidal fight's always there, right? The Masvidal fight's there, win or lose, right? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Conor Diaz 3. Yeah, like, so it doesn't matter. Those guys could lose 10 in a row. That'd still be a pay-per-view headliner. I feel like the same thing would come to Masvidal. So I'm not trying to set up Colby as, like, not being prepared or but I just feel like Colby doesn't have as much on the line.
Well, also, don't think it's always about stories that come out of fights, and I feel like if Colby beats Tyron, that's what most people kind of expect to happen. So the story coming out of that will be Tyron's washed and needs to. I feel like if Tyron beats Colby, the story won't be that, oh, Colby's now shit. It'll be that, oh, look, Tyron managed to pull it back. The story will be about Tyron rising to the occasion, so Colby's still there.
Yeah,
and like you said, the Masvidal fight's. In fact, if Colby lost, Masvidal might be more inclined to take that fight. You know, I think the pressure. I know Tyron said in an interview that the pressure is on Colby. I would pretty heavily disagree with that. I think the pressure is on Tyron massively.
Yeah,
and that's without taking into account all the external community interest.
I agree with you. I think Colby's put himself in a wonderful position where, in terms of the division, I think. What Tyron's saying is that Colby has more to lose, whereas because if he's lost less, so if he wins, he's going to be closer than what Tyron will be. If Tyron wins this, it's not like he's that much closer towards the title, whereas at least Colby, he has a great hype train.
He thinks he is. I disagree.
Bro, you're on two losses. Like, you're nowhere near the title
now. We've seen it before. I don't think they'll ever get – like, they didn't like him as their champion.
Well, and especially he was
– he has to force their hand.
Yeah, I mean, I love Tyron, but to go and have these moments of the press conferences and stuff, they expect you to – at least act like you're happy to be the champion.
Right.
He never seemed happy when he was the champion. It always felt like people were always out for him. And maybe there were some people that were out for him. So here he is again trying to make his way back up for it. and he's just grumpy at the press conference. It's good you want to get your point out and you want to say what you want to say, but when you just come off as combative, you're not helping whatever cause that you're trying to champion. You know, in this case, he was trying to champion Black Lives
Matter. I was
going to
say, so that's perfect segue. So let's do this, because some people may not have seen it. It won't take very long. It didn't go. So
sit down, get some popcorn, get plenty of hydration.
In
this is going to last quite some time.
Didn't hear the Tyron Woodley press conference. Here was what he had to say to us in the media earlier today.
Tyron, appreciate you, your time today. Originally, we all thought that you and Colby were going to be up there together, and this was going to be a joint press conference. We find out it's not. Let me ask you, are you disappointed that you don't get the chance to face him down, to you know, deal with him, or are you kind of happy you don't have to put up with his stuff today?
I'm just excited that Black Lives Matter.
Are you surprised that in the lead-up to this fight that he hasn't been more vocal? I mean, this is Colby Covington. He's almost been respectful of you. Is that shocking to you at all, that he hasn't gone into more like he normally does?
You know, I'm just really excited that Black Lives Matter.
Fair enough. And we know that it looks like Usman and Burns is later, you know, this year. A win here would be big for you. Would you keep yourself ready to be a fill-in opponent on a title fight, or are you at a point in your career where you wouldn't do that?
I feel like, you know, a victory here just really shows how much Black Lives Matter.
Fair enough. And then my last question for you then, obviously the Black Lives Matter shirt on. Clearly you want to keep it in that direction today. Would you like to use this platform to deliver any messages to everyone out there?
Just that Black Lives Matter.
Hey, Tyron. Obviously, the political movement of Black Lives Matter has taken a lot of momentum over the past few months and even the year. Do you think this fight amplifies to you the need to express your support for that cause?
No, I just think that Black Lives Matter.
Could you tell us when Colby first started talking about you years ago when you were training together, were you surprised, based on your interactions in the gym, that he decided to start campaigning against you in the way that he did?
No, I wasn't surprised, especially since Black Lives Matter.
Cool. Thank you, Tyron.
Tyron right here. Before your last few fights, especially in the Darren Till, the Maya, and the Wonderboy Thompson fights, you've kind of built your camp around the specific fighter, but now Colby Covington and his coach have come out saying that they realize he's not even a southpaw anymore, which hinting that he might fight orthodox. I'm wondering if you heard that, and does that change anything about your game plan?
I just hope they realize Black Lives Matter.
Tyron,
how you doing?
Would you shake Colby Covington's hand if he realized that Black Lives Matter?
I like your style, and I definitely realize that Black Lives Matter.
Tyron, is there anything specifically from a social standpoint that you would like to? I mean, obviously, you've been saying the Black Lives Matter thing. Is there anything in particular within that subject that you would also like to shine some light on?
Just the fact that Black Lives Matter. I think it's pretty simple. Thank you, guys.
All right, so hopefully you didn't fall asleep during that lengthy
Wake up.
No, it was quick in and out. All right, so a couple things I want to mention about this. First of all, this is not the only time that Tyron Woodley has ever done this. Now, it was with Black Lives Matter. Before he won the title in Atlanta, right? And he
greatest welterweight of all time.
Greatest welterweight of all time. Greatest welterweight of all time. I think that was. I just like to say that. So yeah. He's done this before.
Yeah.
Where he's refused. So I didn't take it as combative, but I will say this is now, we always try to avoid getting too political here, and I'm obviously not going to jump all into this. But what I will say is, once it was clear that that's what he wanted to keep it on. And by the way, if you want the visual as well, if you haven't seen the visual, he's wearing a Black Lives Matter T-shirt and a red hat, obviously meant to look like the MAGA hat that says "Let racists catch the fade again" or something like that.
I think it's "Make crazy."
Yeah, something like that. So I mean, obviously,
that's a hairstyle, though, right? The fade.
It can't.
Was he wanted them to be a hairstyle?
He wanted them to get a nice little haircut.
To catch
a
hairstyle?
Get a nice little haircut. Yeah.
Which is weird because most of them don't have much hair to play with. They're usually skin.
I get what you did there.
But here's what I'll say to your point that you were making earlier is that I wish, and again, I'm not mad at Tyron Woodley. Like I've always said from the beginning, these athletes, to me, in my mind, they don't owe us anything. So, like, yeah. People are like, oh, I came and showed up and covered your press conference and you gave me that. They don't owe you anything. You're there right. To cover what they want to say. They can say as much or as little as they want. They don't owe you anything. So I want to make that very, very clear. So I didn't have an issue with it. But what I would have liked to seen is I wish he, you know, when it was clear that that's all he was going to do, you know, I asked a couple questions and I was, okay, I get it. I understand where he's coming. And obviously this is the time in the world. That's fine. You got your platform. Our cameras are on. You got the microphone. Tyron, what do you want to say? And he didn't have more. I wish he would have had more to support what his movement was. And again, I'm not trying to take a shot at him, but I think to your point, if you want it to be effective, if you want it to be impactful, to me, and trust me, I've already seen the comments in some of the comment sections.
Yeah.
They're not good. And obviously, when we made the videos, I knew the comments were going to be bad because you know what to expect out of people.
Yeah.
so you know it's going to happen. But I think that probably just gives people like fuel to the fire to be the way they are versus like, you know, saying, you know, laying out some of the issues or laying out, you know, some of the names or some of the, you know what I mean? Just, I wish he would have taken a little step further. Kudos to him for taking a stand on an issue and using his platform when he could be trying to build his brand to raise awareness to a movement. I have no problem with that. I just wish he would have had a little like added info because I think what you were kind of saying is right. Is that I think there's going to be a lot of people that come off and go like, oh, that guy, man.
Yeah. It's one thing to use a platform and try to act like you're to actually try to use your platform. That to me was not anywhere near what I would classify as an effective use of a platform. Mm. You know, if you're going to go out there, I mean, if anything, if it was a matter of here, take my picture, let this image speak 1,000 words, that image alone will do wonders and people can talk and they could say whatever. But if you actually have a chance to as well, make vocal your thoughts, your wishes, your issues on things, that was the point. And when I said earlier, when somebody like if you want to try to be a champion, you want to do what everybody understands, you got to play the game, or you at least have to give something. You know, everybody goes to the job, and sure, everybody has bad days, everybody has issues about whatever, but you still smile, you still put on a face, and you still give something that is productive towards your career, towards working towards something. What that was when what Tyron gets up there a lot of times, what's crazy is that we've all seen him in other days when that's turned off, when it's just Tyron being Tyron, and he's such a well likable dude. He's fun to be around.
I talked to him on the phone yesterday.
Yeah,
I talked to him on the phone one day prior, and he was phenomenal.
Dude, it's amazing. Yeah, I see videos really nice. With him with his family.
I think the weight cut fucks him up a little bit, man.
And that could be it too. I mean, I could be an asshole for trying to say, oh, why aren't you happy? And it's like, not that I'm saying why aren't you happier, but it's like, why aren't you enjoying the platform and using it to have a little fun? Push yourself out there. But if he's cutting weight and shit's hurting, you know, I get it. You know, it sucks to be up there. But, you know, if you're in there and you see these guys, you see Hamzat, you see all these other guys that are getting this hype train because they're embracing it. They're not fighting it. It's not like if Hamzat just went up there and was just like, you know, blah blah blah, America, you know, I'm really sad of your treatment of Muslims. And we went up there and said that every time. America's just like, fuck, I don't want to see this guy.
Yes.
You're like, nobody's gonna care, but that's all stuff that could really what could be going through his mind.
Right.
But he's choosing to just embrace the money, he's playing the game, and people are like, okay, fine, whatever, you know, and they allow him to do these things. So with Tyron, you know, at some points it's almost like he gets caught up in something in his head and he shoots himself in the foot. Instead of opening up a doorway, he finds some way to close a door of a possible opportunities, because all you end up seeing at some point sometimes is a guy that looks like he has a chip on his shoulder and he's upset about something.
As I'm thinking about it, like, man, you touched on the weight cut thing, makes me think, okay, maybe that's
– And that could be a huge part
But hold on. But even then, let me say this. Even if that is part of it, like, even if when I had said, okay, hey, it's clear this is the direction you want to go, what would you like to say? Even if he had said something like, listen, today is not the right day for me to get into this and it's not the right time, but please, everyone, go do your research. This is not – You know what I mean?
And Black Lives Matter. And that would have resonated 10,000 times more effective.
I think that would have been so much more effective, huge. Man.
It would have been huge.
Not saying he has to do the whole diatribe, but just say, listen, today's not the day for me to get into it,
right.
But do your research, read about this name, read about this, read about that.
That's a wonderful way to make a statement, to say something without actually saying anything at all.
Well, I also,
you know,
I mean, my feeling is combined of both of yours. I think, first of all, these athletes owe us nothing. So, and I think actually Woodley should be commended for, he had the opportunity to build his own profile, build his own fight, and he chose to use it for a movement that he believes in. But then on to your point, Kenny, is like, it's about using it effectively.
Right.
And, my first reaction, you know, as the three white guys in the room discussing this,
right.
But I mean, my first reaction was like, man, you had you were booked up there for 30 minutes. We had 30 minutes with Woodley today.
Yeah.
If you came up there, spoke about Breonna Taylor, spoke about George Floyd, spoke about what the defund the police means, and it doesn't necessarily mean this, it means using community funded programs to do different things. If you'd have stood up there and said that and listed off bullet points, and we are a captive audience for 30 minutes, we can't go anywhere, we can't make you stop talking, I think you could have just driven home something very, very powerful. And as somebody who's very open to his political leanings, I was kind of left like, fuck, man. I got where you were going. You just never got there.
That's it. I want to be clear. It's not like any of us are trying to take a shot at the guy or saying he was out of line. It's just like, damn, dude, you could have been so much more effective with what you were trying to do.
Especially Woodley. One, I mean, he's a former champ. He's a good-looking dude. He has a platform. And it's like people would resonate to
burgeoning your music career.
Yeah, I mean, motherfucker is hot on that shit. His message would resonate, you feel bad because you had a perfect platform for it, and you were so close. You were on the doorstep of making
It's like what you just said, like, and I've said this to John 100 times. I feel like Tyron always finds a way to get in his own way. Yeah. It's almost like he always... when Tyron was at his... I personally found Tyron at his most likable before the Usman fight, where he was just super relaxed, super chilled, just kind of doing his own thing. Really nice guy to deal with. And then he gets in his way. I find whenever he tries to sort of make a stance and show himself to be a figure, like this is who I am as a person, it's almost like it's never organic. It's never natural enough. And I'm not trying to say that the guy doesn't mean what he says, because he obviously does.
Right.
And it's also his actions today are very weird, because he did an interview with Ariel where he was like, oh, I don't want this to be a race thing. I don't want that pressure put on me. And then he comes out and only says Black Lives Matter. It's like, motherfucker, you just put the pressure on yourself.
That's interesting.
It's a very... I don't know. I do think the weight cut thing is only something I just thought about. Like, I remember before the Till fight, he was a complete dick to deal with.
Right.
And the media day then, he was super like passive aggressive and horrible to deal with. And I believe that was because of the weight cut.
He's more of a Wednesday guy than a Thursday guy.
You joke that the Usman
that
media
24 hour difference is.
You joke. Yeah. The Till media day was on a Thursday. Today was on a Thursday. Yeah. I believe the Usman one, which was on the same card as Jones and someone else,
was
on
a
Wednesday. And he was super.
Like I said,
different.
I had him on the phone Wednesday. And
I honestly, believe there's something to that. But having said that, it's not like he just bought the fucking hat and the t-shirt this morning. He obviously had that and that planned.
I'm so angry. I need a t-shirt and hat.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the flip side of this. Colby Covington as well. Listen, you know, a lightning rod of controversy, I guess, certainly brings it upon himself. I think, and I've said this, anybody that listens to the show for a long time will tell you, first of all, I think he's a phenomenal fighter. I think he's underrated. Second of all, it's funny because I think the cat's out of the bag by now, but he is definitely playing a character. That is not the guy he is in front of the camera. It's not the guy he is behind the camera. And listen, I think, Oscar, I think you were the first one to really point it out, and to me at least, is how much more respectful or how much less disrespectful that he's been ahead of this week. And
just
I don't know.
Just quieter.
It's been an interesting story. So let's do this. Let's go ahead and listen to what Colby had to say. Not a long one necessarily either, but a few more minutes. And he took, you know, he's always got a canned statement or two. He's got a line or two ready, but he didn't take dead aim. So let's listen to Colby.
Colby, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you the inspiration for the suit today. That's pretty powerful gear you've got on there.
Yeah, you know, my great suit maker, Luigi Girardi, out of Miami, made me this green suit for money because, you know, that's all I'm bringing in for this company these days and myself.
I like it. Listen, I think you've been kind of surprisingly respectful towards Tyron. I mean, obviously a little trash talk, but not the levels we're used to. I'm curious, is this part of Colby Covington 2.0? Is there something about this matchup that you haven't kind of gone in on him as much as you have on people in the past?
You know, I wouldn't say it like that. I just would say that I got better things to do. You know, I was planning speeches to hang out with the president and attend his rally, and I'm doing bigger things these days. So, You know, I'm not really worried about anything Tyrone does. The only thing that I'm going to be worried about is if he tries to rap in that octagon.
This is your first fight as Colby Covington Incorporated, the new team. Talk to me about the preparation. I mean, I imagine, you know, individualized attention, but also a lot of challenges, right? I mean, you left an accomplished team, accomplished structure, all those things. So have there been any challenges in this new setup that you have, or have you found it pleasant?
I found it very pleasant. It's been, very just free, you know. I don't have people that go to a manager and complain to him, you know, and be like, oh, you need to kick this guy out. He said some mean things. This professional cage fighter who gets locked in a cage in his underwear to take people's brain cells. Oh, but he says mean things. Kick him out of the gym. If you got complaints, direct them to the head of the complaint department, me at Colby Covington Incorporated.
A win here would certainly be big for you. There'd be clearly two fights on the table that everybody would want to see, right? The rematch with Kamaru Usman, I think everybody would be in for that, or the grudge match with Masvidal. So if you would be able to pick one or the other, if Dana came to you and said, Colby, we like your style, we like what you're doing, you make the call. Which fight do you take first?
That's a tough one to ask because both those guys are going to get it. It doesn't matter in which order it goes. It could be Marty Fake Newsman first or Street Judas Masvidal, but they will both get it unless they're both cowards and tuck their heads between their tails and run off. But, you know, those are the only two fights I'm looking for after I end Tyrone Woodley's career on Saturday night on ESPN.
Hey, Colby. I think most people thought that it was going to be you and Tyrone up on stage together. When did you find out that wasn't going to be the case?
I thought the same thing. You know, I thought I'd be able to get in his head, play some mind games, see him face to face, look that coward in the eyes after we did the press conference. But I just found out yesterday. They called me and they said, hey, you're going to be single, and there'll be all the nerds from the media that should be at the Comic-Con and Dungeons & Dragons thing. But, I found that out yesterday.
Dana said it was because they wanted to highlight the undercard. Do you think that's the truth, do you think maybe Tyrone asked not to engage with you in person?
Yeah, I would think that Tyrone asked to not engage with me in person. You know, he's doing his little thing. He's trying to copy what I do. You know, he's wearing some hat that says whatever it said, make racists fade again, you know. But the only person that's catching a fade is Tyrone Woodley on Saturday night, and he's the only one that's racist. And the only race there is in this fight is the race to get him out of the UFC.
When you used to train with him, even before you started being such an avid Trump supporter, you were targeting him years ago, saying that you've been training with him, you could beat him. What did you see in training that made you so confident that you could beat him in a fight?
I just saw that Tyrone Woodley was a tin man, and he had no heart. And so I knew right away that, you know, if we ever crossed paths, it was going to be an easy night's work for me. And that's what's going to happen on Saturday night. It's going to be, you know, easy money, and I'm going to expose him and take him to the deep end of the pool, and he's going to drown.
I saw a quote from your coach earlier this week saying that you've just found out that you're not a southpaw. Is that true?
No, it's definitely not true. I didn't just find out I'm a southpaw. You know, I've been fighting southpaw my whole career and, you know, boxing southpaw for 15-plus years. So, you know, I just choose to put my right leg in the front because that's the way I wrestled and I feel comfortable with my footwork. And I've developed a strong left hand and I have power in both my hands. So, you know, just like Uncle JLP says, you know, why wouldn't you put your strong hand in the front? Because boxing says that the most effective thing is your jab, so... You know, I feel very comfortable from southpaw, but I can fight from both positions now, so we'll have to see. I'm chaos. I'm unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen Saturday night.
I know Tyrone has sort of minimalized the impact and the stuff behind it, but what did you think when you saw Jorge Masvidal going to train with him?
I thought that was a great game plan for Tyrone Woodley to bring a guy who I used to beat up every day and so he could learn how to lose to me, you know. The only thing they were game planning was how they're going to pay their alimony payments.
Thanks very much.
Colby right here on the other side. We just saw you take another photo with President Trump with fellow UFC fighters. I'm just wondering what that experience was like so close to your fight.
Man, that was amazing, getting to see President Trump again. You know, I've seen him multiple times now, and, you know, I know 1% of the people ever get to see him ever in their lifetime, and the fact that I've got to see him multiple times is inspiring, humbling, and it was an honor. And, you know, I feel like I got some dragon energy from him, and it doesn't matter if they put Hulk in the cage or Superman this weekend, no one's going to beat me.
And then in that group photo that was posted, on the other side of you was Ali Abdelaziz, who you've had a couple run-ins to in the past. Was anything said between you two while you were there?
He knows better than to say something to me. He knows what would happen. Last time he tried to swing on me in the Palms buffet line. But, you know, I'm a professional. I'm in front of the president of the United States, the president of the UFC, Dana White. You know, I conduct my business like a real American. You know, I'm a hard blue-collar American. You know, I'm not a criminal like Ali Abdullah Sleaze, that FBI informant.
Colby, Media Nerd 101 right here. Now, I want to ask you this. Where does this fight rank with all the hype behind it? I know you just fought for the title. Where does this fight rank in your legacy?
You know, it ranks up there high. It's a great fight. You know, it's real animosity. It's two guys that want to take each other's heads off. And, you know, you got red versus blue. You got me, capitalism versus him, communism. You got me, MAGA versus him, maggot. So, you know, this is a heated rivalry, long time in the making, and it's better late than never. So it's up there, but it's not the highest or the best challenge that I've had.
With the pressure of the president watching and meeting him again a few days ago, is this make or break for the Colby Covington career?
Nah, not at all, man. Having the Don support, you know, is a blessing. And, you know, I just feel thankful to be here. You know, I wasn't supposed to be here, man. I'm a kid who grew up in a small town in Oregon that was never supposed to get out. So the fact that I'm hanging out with the president, fighting for multi-six-figure paychecks and seven-figure paychecks is an honor. And, you know, you're going to see the best me this weekend and how hungry I am. You know, before I was playing with you guys, thought I was serious before. You're going to see how serious I am this Saturday night.
You were the only one wearing an orange suit. Did he like the orange suit? You didn't get the memo for the dark navy blue like everybody else.
Everybody knows, you know, I don't follow suit with anybody. I'm a leader. I'm not a follower. So I do what I want. He loved the suit. You know, he was giving me compliments about it, you know, and, you know, multiple shout-outs during his rally. So, you know, he loved it. I know he did.
And lastly, when they call you pillow hands, I think Gilbert Burns tweeted that. What's your response?
Who?
Gilbert Burns, I think he tweeted something about pillow hands.
Who's that?
He's a top contender in the welterweight division.
Never heard of him.
He's fighting Usman for the title.
Never heard of him. They brought some guy off the street to fight Usman for the title? Man, that's bizarre.
All right, so there's Colby Covington. You know what to expect from Colby Covington by now. I will say a little bit more subdued. Listen, I think he's in a big position right here, man. This fight, again, I do feel like Tyron has a lot to lose, but I feel like Colby has a lot to gain because, man, he wins this fight. And you're going to assume, obviously, that Usman and Burns are going to fight later this year. You're going to assume, of course, the rematch between Masvidal and Diaz is happening at some point. But to me, him and Burns, obviously, like, Burns is pretty good at selling a fight. I mean, they don't have a lot of beef, but Burns has been talking a little trash. Yeah, no, that was, come on, that was terrible. Who's dude.
They just find some bum off the street.
I thought that was so funny when he went to who, because I was like, damn,
was
that's what
Usman. So...
I'm like, that's what Usman used to do, dude. I'm like, what are you doing?
I think that the who thing
was
is...
Was that your question?
No, it was Schmo's.
Oh, Schmo, that's the, right. Which Schmo's like, oh, you know, the blah, blah, blah. Fight.
Who is very 90s, I feel like. They fighters need to get the fuck away from that.
Recycles the material a little bit. So him and Burns would be a big fight, but a rematch between him and Usman, of course, would be very, very big. And him and Masvidal is very, very big. So
that's
I feel like Colby
one,
has
dude.
A lot. Man, I'm telling you what. I think him and Masvidal is a bigger fight than the rematch with Usman.
I think him. Yeah. I think Colby Masvidal is bigger than Masvidal Usman 2 or Colby Usman 2.
Yeah.
I think good on him. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about, you know, this whole character thing is that he's built something that people want to either see him smashed or, you know, or smash someone else. I mean, so good on him. I mean, he's found a way to make money without even needing a title shot or even a main event to do it. I mean,
here's a question. What happens if Trump loses the election? What the fuck does he do then with his character?
I do wonder about that.
See, we spoke about this before, right? He should just become hardcore Biden.
That would be hilarious.
The funniest fucking thing
That would be
ever.
Hilarious. Just switch over to Biden.
He's like, yeah, Biden's here. Come on in, one and all.
I'm riding with Biden.
Yeah. Uncle Joe's here for saving us all.
Oh,
yeah. That'd
man.
Be awesome, but I don't know if he's that.
No, so, he would just bitch for the next 4 years and just use it. He would still roll out there. Like,
do you think so?
Yeah.
I think maybe.
I think he's ride or die. I don't think I wouldn't ever see him change.
Mate, as if he's...
Do you think he knows any one of Trump's policies?
No, absolutely not. I believe that Colin Covington has absolutely zero political appearance.
He probably likes Trump because Trump agreed to meet him. Do you know? I don't think he.
Yeah.
He just does it to trigger people. There's no question. He just does it to make people upset. I ended up picking Colby in the staff picks. Cole Coffey, I know you're on furlough this week, but you turned in your staff pick. Do you remember? Because you had to turn it in a week ago.
Who did I pick? I did pick Colby.
Yeah, I did pick Colby. I do think Colby's the right pick here. But
double check that. We'll see. But I want to say I did.
We'll see how I play that. Co-main event, Donald Cerrone, Nico Price. All action right here. Interesting, right? Dana came out and kind of said, hey, man, Cowboys really in need of a win here. Kind of made it sound like the end could be near. Of course, Cowboys saying
– I picked Woodley.
You picked Woodley?
What?
Well,
why?
In fairness, I think basically because he's on furlough, he had to do his picks like a week early and probably like during the middle of an event or something. So,
Yeah, I actually don't remember.
I guess by me saying that, I just made it seem like Woodley has no chance of winning
When I said, why did you do that? I felt pretty bad.
Woodley can
so
win.
So as long as Tyron understands that I have his back, unlike all these fucking crackers around us.
Oh, so great.
It's funny because you're on furlough, so during fight night, we just know. You'll be on a knee, one fist in the air.
The whole fight. The whole time.
You got his back. All right, Cowboy Cerrone, Nico Price, a fun fight. Like you said, Dana making some comments that maybe, you know, he feels like it's important that the end could be near. I don't necessarily feel that the end could be near. And obviously, I'll just lay it out there. If you don't know by now, I'm a Cowboy homer. I've enjoyed covering his career for quite a long time. I don't feel like he's necessarily at the end. I understand that, like, at this point, Cowboy is never going to be a UFC champion. Like, I'm totally okay with that. I mean, fights like this with Nico Price. I know. Shocking. I know, bro. But fights like this with Nico Price, I mean, dude, this is going to be a great fight. I love the fact that, dude, both these guys are just like, love the other dude, respect the other dude, great person, great fighter, and this is going to be crazy. I mean, I'm stoked for this one. Now, granted, I'm probably going to curse it like Lewis Ngannou or something, but I just see no way that this fight could be bad.
Yeah, I think the only way it could be bad.
You should never say that phrase. That is like the worst. That is your bad phrase. Whenever you say there's no way, you throw that out there in the universe.
I think the only way it could be bad is if like Price came out, Cerrone started slow, and Price just fucked him up in the first round. That would be depressing. I actually thought Cerrone looked as good as he looked in a while against Pettis. I thought he won that fight. Yeah. I thought he looked, more importantly, he looked like he was in the fight. You know, he didn't look like, and he didn't look that bad against Cerrone or Gaethje. Well, he looked shit, not Gaethje, but Ferguson he looked okay against. Yeah. But against Pettis, I thought he looked back on it, and he's saying all the right things, and, you know, he did mention, he said, oh, the only difference is I'm going to start faster, and it's like, well, I've heard you say that a few times, Donald, and I've also heard you say that, you know, I'm just coming in here to have fun. But I do think Cerrone's at his best when the other guy's playing ball and when they're not.
Yeah.
At it. You know, he always does better when the other guy's not trying to fuck him up. And Nico is playing that game. So I would be very sad to see Cerrone. BJ Penn lost five in a row, didn't he?
This would be five.
So, but that's as most as anyone's ever lost in a row in the UFC, isn't it? I'm sure. I don't think there's been a six loss. I know Tito and BJ Penn, I think, were the worst.
I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think Nico and
I just don't want to see Cerrone fucking be the record head kick wins, the record wins, the record appearances, the record losses in a row.
Well, by the way, BJ got to seven.
Okay, wow. No, Cerrone, you're fine.
That's thing. I just don't want to see like a Cerrone come in there where everybody's questioning, like, if he's slurring words, if he's starting to show
he looks
damage.
He looks great for his age.
Like, as soon as they match him up with, like, a dude coming off the Contender Series or something, and you're like,
I was convinced they wanted to match him up with Khamzat when you know, they were trying to get Khamzat here, and Cerrone had accepted a fight. And then they have the visa issues with Khamzat. I was convinced I wanted to match them up because they know Cerrone doesn't watch fights. They know he probably doesn't know who the fucking guy is. So he'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll fight him. I was convinced in my head they were going to do that.
By the way, he knows who he is now. They were sitting together today at the press conference. Now, I did get a little intel of an issue that happened at the hotel where Khamzat and Kevin Holland got into it, which I can 100% see happening. I can envision that 1,000,000%. Obviously, Kevin, I love Kevin, man. He's just a
Kevin's
crazy.
A hothead, man.
I love him as well, man. So apparently him and Hamzat got into it, and Cowboy ended up having to step in between them. And I asked him about it at the press conference day, and he didn't really bite on it much. He was just like, ah, just
he's
totally.
No rat, dude.
He
didn't want to rat.
I know. I was hoping I had gotten tipped off. They were like, dude, you should ask him about it. Like, it's a great story. And the Cowboy's just like, he completely no-sold it. He's like, ah, I just told these young bucks, fight on Saturday night, you know? And I was like, damn it. Give me more than that, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's funny because Cerrone's like, would be significantly smaller than I think Hamza and Kevin Holland, especially. Kevin Holland's a big
oh,
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys started pushing around, like, you got to get out.
I think
way.
They just you got. Cowboys got that
Cowboys,
respect.
Cowboys, yes,
though,
Cowboy,
know?
Bro.
That's it. That's
like,
it.
Cowboys got, like, oh, whoa, Cowboys here? Yeah. Like, ah, my bad, my
you
bad.
Know? But yeah, you're right. I think Cowboy does his best when he's friendly and then he's in good spirits, that there's no shit talking. And this is that perfect fight. I think you brought up Pettis. That was just a resurging Pettis. Pettis looked better than he had looked in quite some time in that particular fight. I think that's why that worked in his favor. But, I mean, Nico's another beast, man. And I like Cowboy a lot. But Nico's shown recently that he can be getting his ass beat and he pulls something out. And I just – he's still got that youth. He's still got that little bit of luck
almost,
on his
side.
He's
almost like a younger Cowboy. In
right.
a way, right?
He is.
Right.
That was one thing I was going to ask
he's
Nico.
He's taking less shots on the chin. His body's taking less.
He's going to be quicker. He's going to be more power.
I feel like this is knowing Nico, I don't think he would agree to this, but it very much could be like a passing of the torch of like that guy. I mean, Cowboy's that guy, right?
But also, yeah.
Nico could be that guy.
You would say Nico's more natural welterweight, though. I mean, Cerrone's a welterweight now because he's probably too old to cut the weight.
Right.
Nico's a bigger guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's great about that is – Nico is – I love the respect shown from Nico towards Cowboy.
Yeah.
You know –
I think if you're a dick to Cowboy
guy,
these days, you're just
a you're just a
dick.
And then everybody hates you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're right. I mean, but Cowboy's such – it's funny because it could be a passing of the torch when it comes to a guy that likes to fight often, is explosive, has a lot of heart. But, I mean, like, there's never ever going to be another Cowboy, no matter how you try to swing it, no matter how you try to imitate it.
Cowboy Oliveira.
There's something about his swagger, and there's something about his just, one, his openness. I know we've talked about it over and over and over, his way that he recounts the fear of going into fights, you know, the way he has a way of verbalizing things that you literally feel every moment and every emotion about it, that is so endearing, I think, for fans. And then for him to overcome his fears, get in there and fight often, he does what every one of us wishes that we were man enough to do.
And he's honest about it.
And he's honest about it. Like, he's not afraid to show and say he was afraid. I swear to God, every time I think about the story that he told about when he was scuba diving in the caves and then was facing death, like, the way he told that story,
so
I felt like,
it
gave me
nuts.
Like a nightmare. Like, the shit was so real. And it's like, how can you not love this dude? So, like, when it comes to terms of, like, just personality and the swagger and the overall just what Cowboy is, you can never replace. But when it comes to, like, handing off to a young cat that is willing to, one, be respectful to his opponents, goes in there with a smile, and has such heart and amazing talent, Nico's a wonderful individual to possibly step into that.
So what you're saying is you want to barn brawl for 15 minutes. Cowboy loses, rightfully so, and he takes the hat off, and he puts it, on Nico's head, and then it becomes Nico Cowboy Price for the rest of his career.
I might cry at that point.
I'd be fucking off. Like, yes! And then, like, you know, Cowboy disappears, and then, like,
Rocky stands up in the crowd.
Nico's Cowboy for a few years, and then one day gets beaten up, and then who comes out of the shadows but fucking Cerrone?
We got to get you in charge of script writing for the UFC. I will say this. Let me say this, and again, admitting that I'm an incredible Cowboy homer, but four fight losing streak, as you pointed out, Hot T, the Anthony Pettis fight, very 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 competitive. The other three losses: Conor McGregor, Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson. I mean, that's sick. Now go back further. He's 4-8 in his last 12. I mean, that sounds pretty bad to say 4-8 in the last 12. The other losses that besides the one that we just said: Leon Edwards, Darren Till, Robbie Lawler, Jorge Masvidal.
Well, so Masvidal, that was before Masvidal's mad resurgence. So I think,
and then before that,
but hold on, Masvidal. Fair. Am I not wrong in saying Masvidal was right after the war with Matt Brown, where he definitely would not have been recovered from
100%.
The shots he took that?
Yeah, 100%.
So he lost him. Darren Till, he definitely didn't know who that was.
No question about it.
Leon Edwards, I think everyone in the industry's heard how little serious he took that fight. over there.
Yep.
But I mean, those guys are studs anyway. Darren Till was massive for the division. Leon Edwards is obviously just incredible.
Oh, dude, when they stood in the cage together with Till.
It's crazy. When you go down the list of just who's beat Cowboy, it is literally a who's who of badasses.
It's insane.
It's sad to think that the only name that maybe somebody might be like, who's that, is Jamie Varner, who was a good fighter in his own
as well. Yeah, people nowadays won't know, but back in the day, he was a man.
That was at WEC 38 in 2009.
He was the man back
then. Look at that. His losses after that, Benson Henderson, then Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Rafael Dos Anjos, and then the guys that you mentioned. The guy only loses to the absolute best people in the world. It's unreal. I mean, like, this guy's career, like, and I know we've said it over and over and over, he's a future Hall of Famer. I mean, and
they actually said that. I love it. It was okay, the press conference, they had like the taped intro where like people like go ahead and coming up first, and they're like
just silence.
I mean, there's no fans in the building, it's just us. I'm like, why are they doing this?
Nico Price is like,
slow clapping out.
But it was fun. So the voiceover that they had for Cowboy, I mean, they did just say, like, future Hall of Fame, right? I mean,
he'll be the guy that when he retires, like, he'll get the Bisping treatment, right? Like, so Bisping retired and was in the Hall of Fame as soon as possible. Which, actually, have they announced all the inductions for this year? They have. No, have they?
I don't think so.
Is Cormier not in it? He will be.
No, he wasn't originally.
Well, he's getting in it next year.
Yeah, I don't think they've announced
him. I think when Cerrone retires, he's getting in it like that. Like,
they'll make a division for him. They'll figure out that by that point. They're like,
the Cowboy
fan
wing.
Vote.
The BMF or wing or something.
Yeah.
the Cowboy wing. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, he's become there's a period in every fighter's life where it's like Bisping, before he won it, they're going to be the best guy to never win a world title, right? And that's the unfortunate pub quiz answer you're going to be. It's like Cerrone has fought so much. He was at that point and then sort of fought so much, he's past it. So now his legacy is not the fact he never won a world title. His legacy is only positive. Yep. He's just always fighting.
There's no way he can hate the gap. All right, Ryan Spann versus Johnny Walker. Big fight here, man. This is a big fight at 205. Ryan Spann, a guy that really just gets no respect whatsoever. Johnny Walker, a guy that was, as we touched on earlier, the hype train, and wants to get that back. It's an interesting matchup. I think it's going to be fireworks for sure, and I actually lean towards Ryan Spann in this one.
I know, I know a couple of guys from SPG in Ireland where Johnny Walker's training. I've heard that the reaction to him coming over there and training for this camp there is, in terms of raw talent and athletic ability, the guy is off the charts.
Right.
Like, it's just that I don't want to say he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's sort of still just sort of vibing it.
Right.
And doesn't know that. So I think if he could get discipline, so it's not necessarily all crazy stuff, I think that would do the world a good for him.
I think so. And he touched on that a little bit during the press conference today, where it sounds like he wants to set up shop there, right? And he's saying that, you know,
his girlfriend lives there.
Right. He's bounced around a little bit. But he said that he likes the idea of one coach knowing him, being able to push and being able to, because he's kind of bounced around a little bit, and he's like, not that it's not good to get different looks and to get different knowledge. He's like, but I need somebody that can really refine me. And it sounds like
obviously everyone's different, but I feel like if you just bounce around, like, I do 6 weeks here, 8 weeks there, 6 weeks here, are you learning? Are you improving on your craft, or are you just staying at the level?
I agree.
You're not.
You need somebody that knows you.
You can't learn. It's not like it's a video game where it's like, okay, so I went here and I learned takedowns, and then I went here and I learned flying knees, and then I went here. To stay somewhere to learn the sort of, that's what this gym does. I'm not even sitting here and being like, SPG is easily the obvious fit for him. It was sort of at random when they got there, but I believe Kavanagh is a very good coach at, you know, molding someone. He can say, right, this is what we want you to do from now on. And I think it would be very interesting to see if Johnny comes out and just goes mental for the first minute and a half like he does,
right,
or if he comes out as a more composed fighter. And then, you know, then it's the flip side. Is the fact that he was a wild man, is that what made him good? Is a more composed Johnny Walker not a threat?
Yeah, that's funny, right? When you, that unbridled aggression, which doesn't seem smart, but like, that's what made you who you are.
I will say the chips have fallen well for Johnny. Like, John Jones is gone, and so is Corey Anderson. So the division's
for now.
The division's pathway, while he was just completely disregarded for a while, perhaps a bit more open than it was 2 months ago.
Right.
You know.
He had such an athletic raw talent, I think, is the thing for him. He was just unbridled athleticism mm-hmm. that they needed to kind of, you know, reel in. But I'm glad you like SPG as a Irishman should.
Mm. Oh.
You should have a lot of affinity for that. So maybe at the end he'll do like an Irish dance instead of that worm that hurt his shoulder.
Now that would be funny. You know? I would actually laugh at that.
If he did an Irish jig, that'd be pretty impressive.
That'd be
pretty epic. But
yeah. Man, he's really picking things up quick. At
and I tell you what,
he's embracing it.
There's nothing they like more than foreign people pretending to be Irish. They love it over there.
Main card rounded out with Mackenzie Dern versus Randal Marcos, which could be a great fight. Kevin Holland versus Darren Stewart as well.
Fight of the night.
I imagine that would be. I won't get into the prelims because they are sure to change multiple times between the time you listen to this and the time that we get fighters on the scale. I love the fact that we don't even have like full fight cards until we show up to the weigh-ins.
The weigh-ins
in the
morning. Is the fight. And even then, I think the last three weigh-ins in a row.
Things have changed at yeah. weigh-ins.
They never gave us a final one at that last one. Or it was like, hey, can you give us the final list? And they're like, we're working on it. We're working on it. Like, they're getting ready to face off. Yeah, like, what is the deal?
Well, then, because then sometimes you get COVID-19. Some fucker, some guy, his opponent fell out and his opponent fell out. So those two suddenly face off with each other.
And then for no reason. Yeah. No reason given.
The best thing to do, guys, is not be very good at your job and just don't know any of them.
Just to not
That's
care.
What I practice
just
at.
Just don't care. Yeah. Just go in and just say, what is happening?
COVID-19.
Yeah, I think I know that usually these days I know the main event, the co-main, maybe the co-main event, and then I just show up.
Yeah, the rest of it just changes. All right, want to get you guys take real quick on the Michael Chandler news, because obviously that was big news. Yeah. I'll be honest. I just want to say first off, I got a lot of respect for Michael Chandler because not that I thought this was a negotiating ploy, because I understand the kind of guy he is, the kind of character he has, the type of motivation and drive that he has. But I'll be honest with you, man. If I could, you know, get a nice offer from the UFC and then get it matched from Bellator and just stay there and not have to fight, you know, as deep of a division. I'm not saying that there's not talent in Bellator.
Yeah.
Obviously not. But man, you know, top to bottom, you know, you compare division to division. Come on, man. Once you start getting to number 5, number 6, number 7 on the Bellator roster versus number 5, number 6, number 7 on the UFC roster, there's a difference in talent there. So,
yep.
You know, I thought he could have played that, you know, big fish, small pond mentality, and he didn't, man. He's going head first into it and serving as a backup for the title fight. I mean, that's crazy in itself. As hell. And, man, I guess not shocked by the news. I mean, it seemed like it was shading that way. But, man, big news. And to step in as a backup on a UFC title fight away.
That's like a signing bonus. It's like a, you know, it's one thing to get a nice paycheck, but to get the opportunity to you know, knowing the environment that the world that we're in right now, that things just fall off, you know, and just let alone that fights can fall off even regardless, you know, just weight issues and whatever that's going on. But the fact for him to be able to make the jump over and then not be given a title shot, one, I think a lot of people are talking about that. They're like, oh, he deserves a title shot. And a lot of other people are like, dude wasn't even a champ coming over. Yes, he's a former champ, blah, blah, blah. He's as close as he could be. Yeah, he's as close as he could be to a title shot, and he's literally at the door of it. He said before, he
especially when he starts pushing people downstairs over in Fight Island.
He's like, hey, what's that up there? Oh, boom, boom, boom. I mean, he said that
the Lord will protect you.
You know, while he does want to provide for his family, he definitely is about the challenge. And I think he sees the idea of legacy as well. And he understands that the type of fighters that he's going to fight in the UFC are they going to be the kind that you can hang on your mantle someday and you can be proud of fighting. It's one thing, like you said, to get that nice paycheck that's providing for your family and fight guys that are at a lower level and just be comfortable with that. But for seeing what this guy, he's had broke down legs, broke down ankles in the fight, barely can move, and he's like, I want to fight.
Yeah.
I want to challenge myself. When you see something like that, of course, that's the guy that's like, put me against the biggest guy. I know I can get a big paycheck over here, but if I can get a little bit bigger paycheck
he couldn't have finished. In hindsight, he's the type of guy that could not have finished his career and not said, I gave it a shot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I gave it a shot. I went in there.
Right.
And now he can be
happy and say, just like you said, I gave it all. And he has no doubts in himself because you know that people at some point will be like, oh, well, you were always just in Bellator. You just did this. Now they can't hang that over his head.
Well, it reminds me very much of when they got Askren.
Right.
That was the thing. Oh, that was for Ben, right? Ben was like, fuck, I never got to try it in the UFC. The opportunity came up and he did. Now, competitively, didn't work out so great for him.
Right.
But in terms of a superstar and
I'd like it to Eddie Alvarez, too.
Well, I was going to say... In the time I've been watching the sport, which I don't know, 10 or whatever, like since 2003, maybe, I don't know, the biggest free agents I can remember are Alvarez, Overeem, Askren, and now Michael Chandler. I think those have been the four. Fedor obviously never came, but as far as the outside signings coming in with an established name, those seem to be the four biggest to me.
And Cyborg.
So those four were the biggest. No, Cyborg too. To be fair,
that is true.
I think maybe I'm just disregarding Cyborg.
You could maybe. This would be hardcore. You could maybe throw in Lombard too.
Yeah,
for the hardcores that care.
But I would say out of the four I mentioned, Chandler would, like, in terms of who's got a following, would probably be at the bottom of those. You know, Askren. I think Askren, Alvarez, and Overeem made a bigger splash when they signed.
Right.
That's true.
Perhaps because that was more sudden. I don't know. I wasn't covering the sport when Overeem and Alvarez signed, but to me it felt
and
like...
And people were just clamoring. They had such Overeem avid was a fan massive bases thing, where people were just like, why don't you bring this guy over? Chandler, I don't feel like we had the same push from the fans on the outside. You had some people like, yes, he should come to the UFC. He'll do good.
Maybe because the other guys, it felt like, even Askren, who had retired and come back, they're either going to come in and smash everybody or they're going to come in and be exposed. Whereas Chandler, it's like, we've seen everything Michael has to offer. We just haven't seen it against these particular guys.
Right.
And I think maybe I'll go and say that I think the step up in conversation, particularly in his division, is pretty steep.
Yeah.
You know, I personally believe that, you know, if he, against the Poiriers, the Gaethjes and the Fergusons of the world, great fights.
Yep.
I don't necessarily see him winning them. I couldn't comfortably say he's going to win them. And I think maybe that will hinder some people's excitement for him coming in.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, he's such a talented fighter and he's built like a fucking brick house. I mean, the dude is stacked. He's just, when some people see, he's a, in terms of just height and other stuff, he's a bit undersized, I think, against some of the other guys he's going to fight
in
the UFC.
He'll definitely be smaller.
He's going to be a smaller guy, but when you look at him,
But he's a tank.
But he's an absolute tank.
But I think maybe
he has so much heart. I mean, it's a huge pickup for the UFC, regardless of whether he's only got maybe a couple years left.
And I will say this.
Gaethje would have been a big signing, wouldn't he?
In hindsight, yes. But at the time, because I remember telling people, like, dude, you got to watch this Gaethje kid. Like, I know
didn't know who he was.
I don't think you're alone in that, man. I think on a global scale, but even nationally, dude, I don't think people were watching World Series of Fighting. Gaethje definitely, weren't watching him, man.
I was going to say, do you think perhaps Bellator's, and this is not to shit on Bellator, but perhaps their change of fortunes, like, you know, when Strikeforce and Pride and everyone, they all got signed. They were massive. Sorry, not massive, but I mean, they were close. I think Bellator, it's fair to say, is second by a fair distance.
Yep.
Do you think maybe Bellator's decline in fortunes, if you want to put it that way, has hindered Chandler's ability to get an audience?
By the way, you know, Bellator had obviously this big news that now they're moving to CBS Sports.
I was just saying, it's good for them. I mean,
here's the thing. It's a great thing. Here's what I want people to realize. It's CBS Sports Network, which is way smaller, but
just
it
CBS
does
proper.
Right. It does open the door to them being on CBS proper, to being on Showtime proper. So what I would say is for Bellator, as you said, man, this whole Paramount thing, they've been in a bad spot. They've known it. Nobody would mention it. Nobody would say it publicly, but they all knew, like, we're on a channel with no other sports and it doesn't even cater to guys. Like, what are we doing, you know? We have no shoulder programming. We have no previews. We have no highlights.
No live products.
No live product. Now they're gonna. Yep. So I mean, I do think that this move is good for them. I think in the interim, I think it's gonna in the very short going, it's gonna be easy to look at them and go, because I think some of the ratings that are gonna come out on CBS Sportsnet are going to be terrible.
Dire. But I think it's about getting the foot in the door.
That's it.
Right?
It's a short term step back to take long term steps.
Yeah, because people have to look for this shit, especially coming on Paramount. Like, I think the last fight was weird, where it was like, I think they replayed. I think I caught the end of Tommy Boy going into it, and then like it went to Tommy Boy it's so bizarre because it's programming stuck in the middle.
It's a topic that's been done to death. But when you know it's 2020, I can watch. If I can't watch soccer in America, I can go to some Saudi Arabian site and watch it live through a stream.
Yep. Right?
And yet there are times where Bellator's had shows in Ireland. I need to like get someone to fucking FaceTime me from the audience to watch it.
That's crazy.
And the annoying thing is when you ask Coker about it, he would obviously try and downplay it because that's his job. That's not good enough.
Yeah.
He knew that it sucked, but he's also a pro and not going to bash his broadcast
partners. But I would personally... until you know the ratings, I'd say this, but I think that it's better suited for them to take the step back in terms of overall viewership, but have access to live proper.
It will help. It's the most hair-scratching, just like, what the fuck is going on moment of Bellator when you're like,
yeah, and then you post an article with the results, and they're like, oh, spoilers. It's like, mate, it's a fucking sport.
It's live.
It's over. The event's over. Just because you haven't watched it, you know, it's not our fault, you know. But
I think Bellator, I think this is going to be a good move long-term for them.
It is. And it's a short-term. It's a gamble,
but I think it will be.
People still need to try to find where. How do I watch CBS Sports Network? But still, the fact that it's attached to CBS is in the name. As
it's a long play as well, though. I mean, they are relying on the fact that the people in charge understand the ratings are going to be poor until they get them on proper or Showtime. I mean, I think I would personally guess the long-term goal is Showtime, just because of the boxing pedigree and history that they're no longer really involved. What they're kind of involved in.
Yeah. Who knows how long that even lasts?
Yeah. So
Showtime can be a temporary
I imagine that's their long-term goal, but they better hope that the people in charge are not looking for short-term solutions. They're like, well, fucking only X thousand people watch this. No, you know. So it's a gamble.
I want to say one thing on Chandler too. I did love the fact that Dana came out and said, like, dude, this dude is weighing in and getting ready. Like, seriously, like, I'm telling you, dude, if Gaethje is at 9 o'clock and Habib's at 9:01, and he's at 10:59, they're still gonna make him weigh in, man, because you just don't know what's gonna happen these days, man.
It does suck that he's not fighting.
Right.
You know, and there's the whole thing with Dustin, Tony, and back and forth and stuff. And I think everyone's sad that we're not getting that fight.
But they usually kick him something for that, don't
they? Oh, they'll kick him a little something.
Yeah, I think they gave.
I mean, they won't
Kamari,
give him a full like, show, but they'll give him
Kamari
something.
Weighed in for Till Woodley, I remember. Yeah. Yep. Which is actually a surprise, I think.
It was.
But, I mean, so you figure, even if. What do you think? I mean, let's just spitball. What do you think they'd even throw him? I mean,
50 grand.
I would the 50 think was what I was 50? Thinking.
50. I don't think they even gave Kamari that much for the Till thing. I think it's less, but you would imagine they have to give him more for traveling to Abu Dhabi. But then, didn't Volkanovski weigh in as a backup for like Frankie Holloway, and he flew from fucking Australia to do that, and he was like, "Oh, yeah."
But
I think that was like 30 grand.
I hope they let us interview.
But that was when he was still like trying to come on his way up.
I remember he was like, "I flew 30 hours to be here." I was like, "You're an idiot. You're a psychopath."
I hope they let us interview Chandler. I'm sure they will. I mean, why wouldn't they let us interview Chandler?
He'll be around.
I will
say
that. That's another thing that. If you haven't, I mean, I would assume most people that are listening to this have heard Michael Chandler speak before, but man, you want a good representative of your company, man. That dude is a professional,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he's good shit.
He's solid, so. All right, well, listen, we've rambled on long enough. I gotta let Cole Coffey get back to his furlough. He's enjoying his.
Well, this is the only communication I've had all day. Can we talk for another 2 hours? No, I'm just kidding. Get the fuck out. No, this is good, but yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to,
We didn't even do any sort of Fight Island preview either.
No, not yet. Oh yeah. Here's give me. You wanted the handover. Do the.
I don't want a handover. I'll just take.
Okay,
it.
I want you to be the best you can be by channeling me.
Okay.
When you're there.
So be a bit grumpy.
Yes, if you could. By the end of it, I want you to just be the shittiest individual that you could possibly.
I don't think you'll have to wait to the end for that.
I'm going to be.
Let's be real. The fights in the middle are they're head scratchers because one, I was asking John, I was like, do we even have the full cards?
We don't even have Saturday's full card yet. It's you think we have so 3 weeks from now?
It's just so crazy. I mean, yeah.
No,
yeah,
I think I'll be a grumpy cunt by the end of it.
I was going to say, I'm interested to see at what point we just absolutely lose our mind. Like
I maintain week three. Week three, I'll be a bitch.
Well, the thing is, too, is.
Or a drunk.
It's been nonstop, especially. I mean, you had a furlough kind of smashed in there, a couple furloughs.
Mm-hmm.
This has been nonstop for you. Like, I've actually. This week, I've sat a little bit, and there was that first few days where it was just like. I was a little like, what do I do with myself? Because it's been this nonstop 2 week shit is for the birds, and it's been going for however many weeks now, 5 weeks, 6 weeks,
with contenders and now you're gonna and the fights,
and then now you're gonna go into a straight 5 week. You might have to watch this, man. Hati might lose his mind before the end of it.
I feel like if I lose my mind, no one will notice the difference anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah, right.
Fair point.
And that usually comes out with me being drunk and aggressive and loud, and that's basically me now.
Normally,
so.
If you see him raging on a ski-doo somewhere in the whatever.
Do you remember the jet ski? I flew off the fucking side of it. I was doing stupid stuff.
He was being an idiot. He was
standing on the seat and doing the fucking all the sorts, man.
How deep was the water where you were at?
I didn't die. It was very salty, though.
Yeah.
I don't know
how deep
it was.
To be that way in the ocean.
No, but like extra salty.
Yeah.
And even the rain was salty.
They actually called it cold coffee water. Extra salty.
It's all man-made. They just built it with salt.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, it's. I'm not. Last time, because we had a Saturday show and a Wednesday show, we were super busy. So I think the reason why I think I'm going to go crazier. Fucking bitch left a bite mark on me. Sorry.
There's a random dog that stopped by his house.
I think we're going to lose minds. Like, because Monday to Wednesday?
Yeah.
Nothing.
That's true. It's going to be crazy.
Figure something out.
We'll have it covered on the NBA Roadshow.
Bar rooms at 12.
Make sure you join us over at patreon.com/NBA Roadshow. Exclusive home of all the and a half episodes, including this week. By the way, this week will be fun. We'll wrap up the fight, do an and a half, and then head on to the plane. We have to be at the airport at 3:30 a.m. Flight leaves at 6 a.m. on Sunday. Woo. So probably no sleep. And, yeah.
You have no time to sleep on the plane.
Yeah, the motherfucker is going to sleep the whole way, and then you're going to get to quarantine and be wide awake to examine
That's the challenge, too. We'll bring you live updates.
Yay! We've made it sound like an exciting trip, guys.
It'll be good. We'll have plenty of content. We'll bring it all. Obviously, it starts with a big pay-per-view, ends with a big pay-per-view, and there's some fights in between. We'll talk about those, too. In the meantime, let me just say, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.